All right, then, the Duratus Mind podcast. I think it's the first time I've got a part deux, and this time it's with, it's Johnny Payne and Fergus Crawley as a second part to the Vertical Marathon Project Possible. Sorry, Project Vertical, I should say. How you doing, lads?
No, we're not. Project Possible is not quite within reach, yes, I'd say.
We'd love to be part of it, but we're not.
Yeah. No, that's Project Impossible for us.
Yeah.
All good. Yeah, my end. I think we're both reaping the, not the rewards, we're reaping the toils of our endeavour. But
yeah, that was my first question, place. Really. That was my first question, really. So 42,000 meters of ascent. It was over 500 miles or kilometers travelled.
540 kilometers. 42,000 meters.
And no, none of that people spoke about the descent. So my first question is, how's your knees?
my left one is fine, which is actually the one I've had an issue with in the past, and my right one is kind of fine some days and then not fine other days at the moment, which is very unpredictable.
So, but what about you, Johnny? How's the body faring?
Well, I've had to go to the doctors, actually. I've got a tore, which explains a little bit. I've torn the tendons in both knees. The right knee quite badly, and ruptured a bursa sac in the left knee. So everything's a bit knackered. So I'm going through a rehab process at the moment, not for the first time. So I'm quite strange word to use. I'm quite comfortable with it. And before we came on, actually, I was talking to you briefly, guys. I'm comfortable now that I know what the problem is. I think beforehand, all this kind of, I wonder what's wrong with my knees. Could it be real bad, etc. Because I've had problems before, but now that I know what's wrong with them, I know how to rehab it, so it's just a matter of time. But still sore, still can't run, but walking the dogs is just about all I want to do anyway. So yeah. we're in a good place with it.
Yeah, good. I'm really pleased that both of you are faring up okay. Some days good, some days bad. I mean, I'm interested in how you're recovering. I think what's really important early doors is just mentioned just how much money you raised, not an insignificant amount, you know, amazing work for Movember and men's mental health. So from me, and I'm sure people listening that supported you, you know, absolutely sterling effort. Before we dig into the detail, it was pretty epic, to be fair.
Thank you. It was 43 grand in the end across all the touch points, which is great. Real big effort from people, not just Johnny and I. There were so many working parts in the behind the scenes that were making this happen and have contributed to the overall effort that has allowed us to raise that much money. So for anyone listening that has donated, massive, massive thank you. Great to hear that people have been able to engage with the message and the cause. But the money raised is a nice number and it will do great things. But I think the engagement and the interaction and the personal messages and open conversations that we've had along the way with people we know, with strangers, have been what's been most valuable about this for us and hopefully for other people as well.
There's been a few people that have asked me privately that have said, did they manage it? And I think it's a really interesting question because you set out with a particular target, you know, 32 ascents of Ben Nevis, much like the money, not an insignificant amount of ascents of Ben Nevis. And that was the goal. However, well, do you want to explain? Because, you know, I've got my take on did you achieve it, if that's the question, because in my mind, you've absolutely crushed it, what it was you were trying to achieve, despite maybe the goal changing slightly. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think we've both got very similar takes on this, don't we, really? And that there's two angles. One's the physical, one's the athletic, and one's course focused. And in terms of the athletic pursuit, this was never a big solo, unsupported endurance world first. We're not really that way inclined. I think there's a stage in our lives where we would have been. But the whole purpose of the project is to encourage other people to climb their own mountain, in simple terms. And the vertical marathon was simply the hook to allow people to engage with that message. We chose 32 ascents and descents of Ben Nevis as our method of climbing our own mountain to engage and put out the message. But I think where this is probably on me more than Johnny in terms of our calculations, because I kind of took the lead on retrofitting the plans and the strategy as such. But I think what we did well was we isolated everything that could go wrong on paper, but didn't necessarily factor that into the overall timings of the project itself. In that we knew we'd have to start icing our knees, we knew we'd have to start strapping our ankles, all this stuff that we just kind of assumed would fit within the break periods that we'd already given ourselves. And in reality, it added an hour here, an hour there, half an hour here, where we actually just kind of sat there laughing with each other and lost time. We didn't acknowledge how much psychological reset time would be required. And I think the biggest mistake we made, and I'm not going to take all the blame for this one, because we both thought we were more sleep adapted than we potentially could be. But I think what we learned hard and fast was that as humans, we have an ability to slog through challenges on little sleep, but there is a point where your body cannot keep up with the lack of sleep. And we figured that out about 2 days in. So we were 2 days in on less than 5 hours sleep a day, having been on the mountain for 12 to 16 hours. And our bodies just started to rapidly deteriorate from that point, to the point where it kind of shocked us both, because it was so out of character for the way that we felt following training. But I think all in all, that meant that we just adjusted the goal. So the athletic pursuit, if people want to look at it that way, that's fine. We fell short of the arbitrary number that we came up with as a hook for people to engage with the cause. But the cause was the whole reason that we did this and the whole reason that we came up with the messaging that we did. And that was a roaring success in my mind, because what we did was we were faced with an obstacle that we couldn't predict. We worked together as men, openly, honestly, with other group. We actually kind of got told off a few times in terms of wanting to chase down the athletic pursuit more than we potentially should. And as we slowly adjusted to the reality of the situation, we acknowledged the position we were in, acknowledged the mistakes we'd made, but most importantly, didn't dwell on them. We just looked forwards, thinking, right, what can we do from here onwards to approach this most logically, most sensibly, and most in line with the cause at hand? I think once we came to that realization, Johnny, we started to enjoy it, we started to embrace it, and we actually connected with our own message a whole lot more than we had done previously. What I found interesting, everybody on social media has basically said how miserable it seemed for the first couple of days, because we were only focusing on the misery, because we were told, oh, be strict with your phones when you're feeling really down, because that's what people want to see, and they do. But once we just embraced, do everything we can every day from here on out, then we were much, much happier. And I think the documentary actually brings that together, shows what it was actually like. First 3 days were miserable because we were just feeling like we were falling short and the goal was unreachable. And then we recalibrated. We still climbed our own mountain, but all we did was adjust the parameters to be able to go at it. And I think that was the most valuable part of the experience, that the lessons learned along the way were enriched as a result of the experience that we went through. And I think that is kind of the message with an underline across it. So,
Johnny, do you want to add some to that, Johnny? Do you?
Yeah, no, it's quite well encapsulated. I think what I was going to jump in on there was the athletic pursuit was foremost, well, not foremost in our mind, it was certainly key, something that we wanted to do, something that we felt we had to achieve. And just something Fergus was touching on then was, as we got to sort of day two, day three, you know, you were there, guys, but the sort of reality of what we had hoped to achieve in that physical sense started to kind of be taken away and drift away from us a little bit. And there was a little bit of time, I think, for both of us, for all of us as a group, really, where that kind of, we saw that kind of float away in the water, and there was a little bit of grief and worry and concern seeing that go away, because we had an idea in our mind that we wanted to achieve what we'd set out to achieve. Now, as Fergus has said on the video and here, there were two factors, two facets to it, really. We wanted to, the message was key, but we had attached ourselves to this kind of idea of meeting this goal and through that, getting that message out there. I think we quickly found, we had to realize that the message wasn't really about that. That actually, as Fergus just said, it kind of enriched the message, or we became the recipients of that message somewhat during that process, simply because we realized that we couldn't achieve what we felt we had wanted to. Therefore, had to adapt. Therefore, had to communicate. Had to accept that kind of external help from the two of us, the team, yourself, the group of people around us. And therefore, we reached out, we found that support, and our interpretation of what we were supposed to do, who we were, what we were actually trying to achieve, all changed therein. So the arbitrary kind of number, although we tried to claw it back a little bit, hold on to figure out, as it flowed differently, we kind of embraced that a little bit, I think, and the message changed for us, which was important, I think, important for everybody.
So yeah, I think what I probably failed to mention as well, actually, is actually just how much of an internal battle I had wrestling with the athletic pursuit versus the cause, because I'm very purpose-driven. I set goals because I want to achieve them, not because I want to rework them every time. Otherwise, that would be a very fluid way of living. But I think due to the exhaustion, due to the setting, due to the publicity behind it, I didn't want to see it as something that I said was going to be done and that we were falling short of. But I think when we actually just boiled it down, the only way we could have learned the things that we learned or have predicted the things that we could have predicted was by taking that first step and experiencing it for ourselves. And everything worked on paper, but Ben Nevis sadly doesn't care for paper. And case in point, day one, we had to push back the start time because we were facing torrential rain in Stornadon with 103 mile an hour winds. So we pushed back the start time, still facing torrential rain, but the winds had died down to a meager 80 mile an hour. So it got to it was minus 19 at the top, up to 80 mile an hour, well, up to 100 mile an hour gusts at the top as well for the first two ascents that we did on day one. And they just took as much. If we had 100% of energy to give at the start, and each day slowly was more and more taking from us, so sort of a 8%, 9%, 10%, we used up 25% of what we had to give on day one, which just meant that the incremental knock-on effect from that was just enormous. And I think we got so lost in the calculations on paper that, for example, I remember this really well, and I keep laughing about it. We were about three quarters of the way up ascent number two, and I felt my right quad cramping. And in my head, I was like, what the f***? How is it day one and you're cramping in your quads? This has never happened before. Something's gone wrong. You're not drinking enough, et cetera, et cetera. And I said to Johnny, oh, I'm feeling my right quad, rather than saying, actually, I'm cramping and really suffering. And he said, yeah, I'm cramping. And both laughed. I'm like, right, okay. And then, only then do we acknowledge that, you know what, maybe that's something to do with the fact that every step we take, we're wrestling with our knees staying stable because of the wind. We're facing torrential rain into our faces. And it doesn't matter what we said we were going to do on paper. We can only work within the parameters that we're facing right now. And this too is going to claim much more from us than two in still conditions would. So I think the lessons that we learned and the evolution that I went through from a more realistic perspective was enormous, because up until about day four, day five, I was still dead set on finding a way to get to the finish. And I think, to be honest, both of us could have slogged it out one way or another to the point of self-destruction, I reckon, but we could have slogged it out in more days following the finish. But within 11 days, I don't think in any circumstances we ever would have been able to complete the task that we set ourselves. That was a miscalculation on our parts.
Yeah.
But that's most importantly for anyone that feels that maybe there were errors made of a significant size. We ultimately only could have figured that out and only have the answer to give you because we went and experienced it for ourselves, which is exciting for us, but it makes us better people, I think.
100%.
Because we've learned a lot from it.
One of the things that I kind of pick up on out of all of that is, you know, you've spoken a couple of times there, Fergus, about what other people might think. There's absolutely nobody scrutinizing the calculations. There's going to be some people that say, well, you're looking to do a vertical marathon. The questions I got asked was, did they do a vertical marathon? It was like, well, no. But what they aim to do was bring people's attention of every single day facing your challenge and keep going at it regardless, because this is your challenge and it's not going to go away unless you resolve it. And so you just kept walking towards it. And, you know, and I think, again, using a really, really rubbish mountain analogy, you know, that almost that false horizon, you know, where you're going over that, thinking you're near the top, and then you see the summit and you're like, oh my word, we are absolutely miles away from where I thought I was. And it's not the reality hasn't changed. If you were able to zoom out, you're exactly where you were. That's not changed, but it's just your perception. And this is, I think, what people struggle with or misinterpret in their own life. And this is the point in my mind of, you know, climb your own mountain. It's taking that strategic look at your life and going, well, where am I? And actually, what's my reality versus what my perception is? Because my perceptions can easily be warped massively by pretty much everything around us these days, you know, media, social media, friends, family, our own expectations, our own inner critics, etc. So I think it's a really good way to look at it. And one of the things you may or may not be aware of, because it's certainly a conversation that I had with a couple of the mountain rescue guys at the summit as I was at the base as I was you know, watching you guys go up and down for most of it. They were saying, oh, you know, we see dozens, if not hundreds of people a year turn up at this mountain and try and get involved in a challenge. And they do a challenge. Then it rains, or then it starts to not come to plan and they just give up. And he said, that's normally the case. And the mountain rescue guys were, you know, I don't know if they said this to your face, but they certainly said it to me, just how impressed they were on at the stage about day three, day four, where you realized, you know what, this probably isn't going to come off what we initially set out to achieve. But that didn't matter. And actually what mattered was that you keep going because you've got accountability to yourself. You've got accountability to the cause. You've got accountability to the thousands of people which were tuning in to see how this goes. I'm sure some people were looking for you to fail. Most people were there in support of you, but you just kept going day to day, and that impressed on them. And it gave me a bit of a reality check of, yeah, you know, that's something else that I've not really thought about, just how many people set out to try and do something mad, harebrain, some might say, but then it doesn't go well. And they go, do you know what? I'm just going to stop, reset, rethink this and come back again another day. But that's not what you did. You know, Storm Aidan was there for you when you got there day one, and you could have easily gone, is this the day to start? Probably not. And that's what your heads would have been saying, I'm sure, right? Talk to me about Storm Aidan a little bit.
Yeah, it was actually, we met with Brody, who was part of Mountain Rescue and basically the man behind the camera in Fort William, about 1 o'clock on the Saturday. We were originally due to start at midnight on the Saturday, sort of on the Sunday, however you like to define that. But midnight that night, we were looking to set off to try and bash out what the original plan was for, because we knew we'd be fresh, we knew we'd be ready to go, we knew we'd be full of energy, and all of our misery was yet to come. So if we could get four out of the way, push hard, try and get them all done in under 5 hours, which based on our experience on Nevis up until that point should have been pretty simple. Well, simple is the wrong word, but should have been manageable. It would have claimed our souls, but it would have been a challenge to sort of get the bulk of it out of the way or put us ahead of the curve so that we can slowly work our way down to an easier finish. And then we were faced with the most torrential rain I think I've ever experienced in the United Kingdom. And got up the mountain forecast and saw, I think it was 117 mile an hour gusts at the top. And we just thought, oh my God, A, this is reckless. B, this means that our plan and the framework we've set inside our own heads to get ahead of it at the start and then settle into an easier constant throughout is off the table, which kind of made us a bit like, oh God, are we going to have to suffer and then go into the biggest and already suffering? And we were just wrestling with this, but I thought, what, there's nothing we can do about it. We'll push back the start. We'll just settle into the constant we already had planned. And then we'll try and catch up towards the end somehow. So we were already in that headspace of knowing that we had to adjust things based on the circumstances we were in. But then my God, once we started, I mean, day one, we started at 6 a.m. It was raining the entire day. Like, it did not stop for a second. And there were points where you genuinely were, it was like you were walking through tar facing the wind in your face, and it was stinging you. It was just any bit of exposed skin, it was brutal. And the higher you got, the colder it got. Peaked at minus 19 at the top. Wind just got steadily higher and higher. And once you get past basically corner one on Nevis, you're exposed the whole way up, more or less, other than when you turn your back to it and you get a little bit of respite. But it was like adding, it's the equivalent of adding a whole load of weight onto our ascent in terms of the added intensity and fatigue. And Johnny, I'll let you explain what happened on our second ascent. But once we got down from the first, we were pretty spent and a bit shaken off, I think. But went in with good spirits into the second one with an intention of doing a third later that day. But then on the second, we settled into feeling pretty good on the way up. And then...
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Yeah. But you had to step in for someone else.
Yeah, it was a bad storm, mate. It really was a bad storm. We'd been up there. I think on the first ascent, we'd been up it was pretty brutal at the top. We stopped for a few seconds, got some pictures, come away again. But like you say, when we got down the bottom, we were tired, but we were still in kind of good spirits. We still felt like, let's go again. And we were chatting away, feel good. But I think as we got, I don't know, within a couple of hundred meters perhaps of the summit, it was brutal. The wind was hard. We were searching around for goggles and things to try and protect ourselves. And then spotted a young girl kind of clinging to a rock, moving very, very slowly. And it was kind of obvious to us both that she wasn't moving very fast or at all. And as we got closer, I think I was just up in front and had a quick chat with her and realised that she was not in a good way. So we made a decision for me to take her back down. And that took quite some time indeed. And because of the way the storm was and because of the fact that this young lass hadn't really prepared particularly well, I was kind of doing a job of protecting her from the wind as we came down. So she got I gave her my goggles and kind of stood in behind her and then acted as a wind buffer and shield all the way down. And it meant that I had to kind of come down sideways all the way and kind of work backwards and, you know, work out the steps and the footing for both of us. So, you know, not to labour it too much, but it was tiring. You know, it was tiring for me. And by the time we got to the bottom, I was completely soaked through. And I know Fergus was when he came down as well. Fergus did summit. But when we both got to the bottom, we were absolutely soaked through. I don't think any clothes could have protected us from that. So I ended up with stage one hypothermia, which isn't terrible, but I think usually you would take a few days, like a bad cold or the beginning of a flu, you would take a few days just to kind of get better from that.
Well, normal people would.
Yeah, we were kind of committed to something else. So it was a case of, right, we just have to get up after 4 hours sleep and the cold sweats that we were both experiencing and just crack on. So day two was just, for me anyway, for both of us, I think, I don't think my having to help Sophie was particularly added much stress, apart from perhaps that little bit of hypothermia. But by the time day two came, we were both spent really and tired, and it felt very different to how we had expected it to feel. And
we were walking down the stairs, weren't we? We caught each other on the stairs and just looked at each other like,
oh no.
Like, both like, but it was like a dazed and confused look of, are you as f***ed as I am? And we were both like,
it's pretty useful to get that moment, because the way that we were set up in our little base camp home, I was kind of this was a mistake on my part. I was a story higher, so every morning I had a sort of a mountain to come down just to get down.
What was wetter? Was Storm Aidan the wettest, or was it the tears of your own tears into your own hands every single night when you realise the enormity of what you'd challenge yourself against?
I took the latter, decision of crying in the bath, so I actually mitigated any of the latter. Yeah. So I anticipated this question months ago, Gaz, so I'm afraid 15 all, Johnny to serve.
Yeah.
I cried a lot, I don't care.
No, yeah, there were a lot of moments we were crying, actually, but... to be fair, day one and day two were torrential rain. But then we were quite lucky with the weather a lot of the time after that. I mean, it wasn't glorious. We had a few days that were absolutely immense. And all that did was draw us more to the mountain, draw us more to the cause, and draw us more to the notion that a key fundamental element of everybody's mental health, whether they know it or not, and that sounds quite prescriptive and know-it-all, but I'm very, very... sort of firm in my belief on that the more time we spend outdoors interacting with it and interacting with one another as part of it, the more we can learn about ourselves and the more we can appreciate what we have. Doug was project manager. For those that don't know, he did an amazing job. He just finished a master's in psychology, and he was just really rearing to be a part of it. He supported every one of my Movember challenges up until this point, no questions asked. Every single one, he's been there. And he has very little experience with mountains. I think he went up one Munro when his friends from Bath came up to visit one year, and they basically just crawled up it because it was so miserable with weather that they couldn't really see the path and thought, right, we'll just go up there. But he came up to the top with us.
Yeah, it was B5 he came up, yeah.
Yeah, and we got to about 800 metres and up above this cloud inversion, basically the whole way around, all the summits around us. And you can see all the way to Schiehallion, which is about 90 miles away, I think, isn't it, Johnny? Yep. So you've got all these peaks, all these Munros for miles to see because you are at the highest point in the UK, which is very easy to forget. And we had this cloud inversion just disguising everything below them other than the peaks. And it was about 4:45, just gone 5. And we had this radiant orangey red sunset just over all the clouds. And we're just standing there looking at it, just laughing, thinking, how on earth is this even something that we're experiencing? Doug was just crying his eyes out. He couldn't explain why. He was just really, really emotionally attached to the moment. And just really, he was really thankful for the experience with Johnny and I, and we were in return, and it was just that learning curve for us was
luckily we explained to him that men shouldn't be crying, and that's a ridiculous thing to do.
Slapped him around the face. Snap out of it, man.
Come on, what's wrong with you?
Man up. No, won't you?
he quickly did the same to us several times. Every time we were whining and crying our eyes out, he was there to call us fools. There were a lot of tears, weren't there? There were a lot of tears, and that's not something either of us are ashamed to say. And actually, as we're suffering days at a time, putting ourselves through hell and crying our way through it, I think that's kind of a key part of the message, really, and that we're not afraid to accept that what we're doing is difficult, and therefore showing emotion is going to be...
Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the things that I picked up on when I was there, on one of the summits, we're having a bit of a water stop on the way up, and... We'd started, I can't remember if it was at the beginning or towards the end. It was one of the conversations that we had anyway. And we'd started the morning down the bottom. Everyone was pretty shattered. Apart from me, I was pretty fresh. I just tipped in and was trying to motivate everybody and realizing everyone's battered. We started walking up, and the conversation went to it was misty when we started. It was rainy. It was cold. And then we got to a certain point, literally within 15 minutes, we were warm. The sun was starting to come up. And as the morning progressed, we approached the top, and, you guys, in fact, it must have been towards the end, and you were kind of 9 days in, and you were like, still just absolutely amazed each time we get up here, and you don't get bored of seeing it, that you get to the top and there's just something. There's something that's connected to us and nature and being outside and taking that in on a different scale to what we're normally used to seeing. It just has this visceral effect on us to get where we go, it's worth it. And you forget everything else. You just can spend some time up there. And I think, you mentioned at the start of how your time estimation for various different things, such as the icing, the strapping, the breakfast, all this kind of stuff, which, as the week went on, it was just becoming more and more laboursome. I think you also didn't factor in the amount of time you needed to stand there and take it all in, and get the memories, because it was absolutely phenomenal on some days. Even the days I was there, it was absolutely phenomenal. And, I think that was one of the things for me that struck me, is just how much time you two were still happy to spend taking it all in 8, 9, 10 days in.
I think the best example of that, and I've spoken about it recently, actually, was, John, you remember this well, we stood on the what's called the staircase. It's basically where everyone breaks their ankles on Everest, because it's just a really aggressive, aggressive little set of big lungy rocks that you need to mitigate. And on the way down, and when you're tired, it's just not much fun. It's where I sprained my ankle, so lesson learned there. I knew it was coming. But we were on the way down. I think it was day 9, day 10, second descent of the day. No, it was first descent of the day, I think. So it's still light, and the farmer that runs the land was there with the two of them and 6 sheepdogs, and we just watched this magnificent display of raw base level efficiency unfold in front of her eyes, and stood there for about 25 minutes, just being like, oh my God, whistling up there, shouting down here, one dog on the summit, one dog down here by the river, and then there's dogs itching to go. They run in, sub in for the other one. The sheep's down there. There's one up there that they've missed. Oh, and then the dog's following it around. We're just standing there like, how on earth does this happen? And we were just so thankful that we got to see it, because it was just amazing to see. Yeah. And there was no like, oh, we should probably get moving. It was like, we are here to appreciate moments like this. And I think, again, once we realized that that was something that we probably hadn't acknowledged as much in our planning beforehand, it was much easier to acknowledge. It was much easier to enjoy those moments, because you never felt like you should be rushing them or cutting them short, because they were as much a part of the project as the actual mileage that we were covering was. The way that I viewed it in the end was anyway.
Yeah, I'd say there was lessons in life many times up that mountain, and I got sick of saying it, to just because I was sick of hearing my own voice after a while. Sick of saying it, every single day gave us a very different and unique view, which we hadn't thought about, we hadn't factored in. We had talked about how we were going to get bored, have gone up and down, and one of the biggest challenges was going to be managing monotony was one of the key words we'd thrown out there at the first hurdle, you know. Going up and down after 2 days, 3 days, we're going to get sick of seeing it. You'll be able to do it with your eyes closed and all the rest of it. And it couldn't be further from the truth, because, as you said, Gaz, each day was a different day, and it was a fresh view, but then also a fresh perspective. You know, we were able to kind of stop, take it in, enjoy that moment. And in enjoying the moment, we were kind of learning a little bit about just being present. I think that was something that we hadn't, right, we've got to run through this. This is what we're going to do next. This is the plan. This is how hard we have to work. We're going to, et cetera, et cetera. And just taking a moment to say, well, here I am. There's no other noise around. This is it. You know, I am here. Was incredibly important. It's something I've taken away. Something I thought I did previously, but hadn't been doing. And just that kind of mindfulness and that being in the moment and just sort of appreciating what you have, right now. It was a great place to discover that, but it's something you can, well, certainly I can now apply daily, I think.
And there's probably both ends to the spectrum of that. There's having the presence when things are good to actually take it in and absorb that morale, absorb that good feeling, that well-being, whatever it is, to be present and to do that. But also, you mentioned dread, monotony, loneliness. These are, you know, your taglines for the event, your kind of words. And it when my obvious observation when I came up the first time was that already that had been forgotten, because the dread had turned into a reality. The word dread was reality. And people always talk about get comfortable being uncomfortable. And, you know, people can read it on Instagram. They can flick through it on Facebook and watch these talks that people give, and maybe on YouTube, and then they can go, yeah, you know, I'm pretty good at getting comfortable in the uncomfortable. And then they get uncomfortable and they go, oh, I don't like this. And then they get miserable and they go, oh, this is vile. And that's the point. You need to be able to become present, that's where you are, and that's the bit you've got to try and work through, rather than going, this is way worse than I expected. I expected bad, because you guys expected bad, but you suffered. And that suffering is hard to prepare for, because you prepare for a certain level of suffering, don't you, when you're training? And then the reality of real suffering happens and you go, this is horrendous. And so both ends of the spectrum, there's value in both, but that those dark times, the when you, things were really uncomfortable, what kind of strategies were you conscious of using to really deal with that in those moments?
Laughter was the main one, wasn't it? I think,
yeah,
I mean, we joked a lot at how delirious and childish we became, but we really did. Like, we really, really did. And we just found quite often that dark humor sort of settled in, and just really sadistic humor settled in, where the more we were suffering, the more we were laughing, because it went from being like, oh, this is a bit shit, to this is a bit shit, isn't it? And we were like, haha, yes, too right, let's crack on. Yeah. It was just a complete perspective shift that went from, I think, to use your own language, it went from us not being present in the moment to being present in the moment and realizing that it's not going to improve unless we change things other than the problem itself to improve the overall existence that we were in. And that's exactly what we did. And we noted the days where we were most spent and most burst was when we were just chatting the most ludicrous. I mean, the amount of accents and rhymes and just utter bollocks we spoke about was absurd. It was funny to look back on, but each day we did just have these moments where we stopped and checked ourselves like, oh dear. Oh dear. But then again, it functions as a distraction, but it shows the simplicity of joy as well. That's what it was for us, is that we were faced with what was previously unknown levels of suffering, misery, missing our families, all this stuff that we expected, but we managed to find the joy, find the humor, find the moments to cherish from what was an otherwise miserable situation, whereas we so easily could have just slipped into, this is miserable, that's what it is. Suffering isn't just a mindset, but there's a lot of mindset that goes alongside it that can help sustain suffering or learn from suffering or reframe suffering so that it's not a negative experience, it's actually a positive one. And for me personally, the reason I enjoy endeavors like this and why endurance is something I focus on sort of earlier than most people tend to find it in their lives is because I've learned more about myself from when I'm in that hole than anything else in life up until this point has taught me. And that's a fascinating sort of profound experience that I'm going to keep chasing for as long as I can, really. Because I know that each thing that I take on, I come out a better, more improved version of myself at the end of it. But taking the first step and committing to learning what it's like to feel uncomfortable doesn't mean you're going to enjoy it the first time, but it does mean that when you step out of the uncomfort, there's a few things you can reflect on to better prepare you for the next time you step into that ring. And it's just another greasy pole in the Western world that we all need to climb, but we need to take the first rung in our stride and figure out how we're gonna climb the rest.
What about yourself, Johnny? Just on that as well, Fergus, just the Royal Marines have one of the tenets of their ethos is humour in the face of adversity. And again, easy to throw away that comment, but when things are dark, when they're black, when they're really difficult, there's nothing better when there's a group of you, when there's a number of you to laugh about. Yeah, you can laugh inwardly and you can find humour in any situation on your own, but it's not the same when you're sharing laughter with, you know, someone you trust at your side, right? So, you know, that humour in the face of adversity is massive, absolutely massive for people, provided you've got someone next to you that you can really share that with. Johnny, what about yourself with regards to little strategies that you learned to cope with, maybe not just laughing at Fergus?
Yeah, well, that was easy to do, frankly. But I think you're right. Back to that cheerfulness in the face of adversity was a tagline that was in my head quite a few times, actually, a motto, should I say? But so humour or and we've touched on it a minute ago, just kind of accepting yourself in that moment. I think quite a lot of suffering comes from, Gaz, you could probably explain this better, but comes from being in a situation and either thinking back or thinking forward away from that situation of what's going to happen next or what did happen before, etc. And kind of not being present tends to kind of throw a lot of mess in amongst your mindset. And I found after a few days, after kind of a reawakening, if you like, on day three, for me, I found that just accepting that this was where I was and being happy about it, choosing to be happy about it, which maybe seems a bit silly to say, but it could be upset about it, or I could just accept this is where I was. And I said to my wife a couple of times on the phone, as much as I was missing her, it was easier for me to just think, well, this is my life now. This is where I live. I happen to live on Ben Nevis and I just have to go up and down it, you know. I described it beforehand as this kind of Sisyphus challenge that we were facing, and I kind of thought, well, if we're going to push this rock up and down this bloody mountain for the rest of eternity, we might as well have a bloody laugh about it. And that worked really well, I think, for both of us. The other thing that I don't know if I could suggest it was a strategy, but that was key, and brings us back to this kind of core message, I think, is that, and you've touched on it yourself just a second ago, is that having each other and then having that wider support network And then that even wider support network out there in kind of the internet world, if you like, where people were reaching in and reaching out rather and telling us they were thinking of us and they were, you know, delighted for what we were doing or what we were doing had spoken to them. All that was huge, perhaps bigger than I'd expected. So just from the one-to-one thing, Fergus described earlier on about the quad cramps, well, that happened every day, whether it was something positive or something negative. Once we remembered to share it with each other, that kind of, oh, well, me too, helped. Even if it was, yeah, I'm feeling absolutely awful today, me too. Oh, well, it's not just me then. Sure, that makes things easier to carry. So that worked. And then knowing that there was a team at the bottom, or that we were able to keep in good comms with them anyway, or new people coming, et cetera. So the camaraderie and the huge, bigger. I had gone there thinking, well, I'll just crack on. I'll get on. I've got my own work to do. I'll get on with it. I'll support Fergus. He'll support me and we'll get on. And the guys at base camp, God bless them, as much as respect, couldn't have any more for them. But I had kind of positioned them in my mind as being, you know, they'll facilitate this for us and we'll get on and do it. And very quickly I was, you know, awakened to the idea that they were as much, if not more, integral to it than we were. And that was good. I enjoyed that. And that helped me keep going more.
There were different tiers of perspective that came with that as well, weren't there? Because we had each other, but we were both in a similar position in terms of exhaustion, perspective, the way we were looking at things. Then we had Doug, who was viewing it from a very objective point of view. And then we had Mountain Rescue, who were kind of somewhere in the middle, where they had a lot of experience on the mountain. They kind of better understood what we were going through and what setting we were in, but still had that rational thought that we could so easily abandon being in the place that we were. And it just, as you said, it just comes back to that support network that we all need, but making sure that you don't place yourself in an echo chamber full of sycophants that just agree with you and everything. Because if you're perpetuating negativity and you've got people around you that are just going to agree and not challenge you on certain things, then that can be a bit of a slippery slope to moving in the wrong direction. But we were so blessed and so lucky to have the support that we did. And that's my biggest takeaway from it personally, is actually just how lucky I am to have Johnny, to have people around me, but more importantly, to really acknowledge how important depth of support network and the sort of mutual access that comes with that. Because everyone that was involved now knows each other on a different level, on a deeper level. And that means that whenever we're facing strife, challenge in the future, we'll be better served to help the other. And that's the beautiful thing for me. That's from a personal point of view, that's my biggest takeaway.
Yeah.
So me too.
You've got a new context, haven't you? You've got new perspectives, and those new perspectives help you deal with the normal bumps in the road, so to speak, because, you know, how big can a problem be when you've, you know, struggled with some of the stuff over the last few months up on Ben Nevis. So, you know, that's awesome. And Johnny, you mentioned there about being present, and there's something I talk about with people quite a lot around catastrophe bias, and we're all guilty of it. And so you both suffered with your niggles, probably more significant than a niggle. I'm doing it an injustice there, but your severe pain in your various different joints on your body, and for people to try and get context to that when we're talking about being present. Well, we feel the pain, we feel the knee pain, we feel the ankle pain. We don't necessarily worry about the physical joint pain. What we do, especially when our identities are around physical specimens, you know, some people wouldn't care less about this, but for you two, that's important, that your identity is built around your levels of fitness to some extent, and physical fitness as well. And when you know you've got an injury, your brain immediately goes, well, I'm doing myself some long-term damage here, and that is going to affect, and this is what you find yourself worrying about, or you know, you might never recover from this. You start imagining yourself you know, never being able to compete or never being able to challenge yourself for anything ever again in the future because of this damn ridiculous challenge that you're in right now. And this is the kind of conversations that you can find yourself in, I'm sure. I mean, I got a little bit of that from yourselves, but again, would you want to elaborate on that somewhat for other people that have probably felt the same?
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it, actually. I mean, you've kind of paraphrased or even verbatim said the same thing that I was going through and saying out loud to Johnny at points, in that The whole point of the project wasn't self-destruction, but we felt at points like we were potentially falling into the trap of, because we placed so many eggs in the basket of this project, that we had to find a way to get to the finish. But then in the broader context, this challenge is just one stepping stone on a bigger process to try and get the cause out there to as many people as possible, in simple terms. And there was then that constant wrestling of, is continuing this the right thing to do? And I feel that we probably actually, in the end, approached things exactly as we should have done, and didn't push beyond our means. We had medical advice that basically was a green light or a red light. And we acknowledged before we even started that that's the qualification that we will take, because whatever we want to do, we need to pass the decision over to someone else, because we won't be in the most rational headspace to make it happen. But I think a key part of it as well was that turning point we discussed earlier, where once we acknowledged that the task had changed and that the parameters of the goal had changed, our perspective became completely different on how to approach it. And doing everything that we could each day was the goal. We achieved an awful lot. And from a fitness point of view, we did 205 miles each and summited Ben Nevis 21 times within 11 days and covered 26,500 meters of elevation, which is 17 miles up the way, give or take, which is, in my mind, a ridiculous thing to have achieved. But for a few days, I was thinking that that was absolutely pathetic, because we'd set ourselves a different goal. And it was once we went from considering the current goal in its entirety to placing it within a broader context, we were much better off.
Yeah, so easy to self-destruct. And again, this is one of the things some people listening will be able to relate to when their things aren't going the way that they expected them to go, to press that self-destruction button and to get yourself out of there. The fight-flight response kicks in, and not be able to manage your self-control in that moment is a key skill for all of us. So yeah, nice one. John, you got anything to add to that, mate?
Yeah, the injury part of it for me came a little bit earlier. We were both concerned about it. We were both bloody sore. As I banged on about too many times, I can confirm. Knee's been a problem for me anyway. It's been reconstructed a couple of times. But I was carrying a little bit of stuff that actually wasn't apparent to me until a few days in, that was dealt with so well that I'll explain. So because the knee was really, really bad, I think it was day three, Fergus, where I was, you know, almost panicking at the top of the hill, and had to come down, and there was calls down at base camp to try and figure out how to help me, etc., which became kind of quite comedic. But at the time it was horrendous for me, you know. And what was bothering me the most, or two parts to what were bothering me, was obviously I was concerned about injury. And I thought I was already at a point where I wouldn't be able to continue without doing myself damage. I'd actually relatively settled into the idea that I might just do the damage and have to be pulled off the mountain. That's fine. I could accept that. But it was upsetting me. And this is what you see in the video. What was upsetting me most was that then I would become this kind of drag behind everybody else. You know, okay, yeah, that's right. And I would have to, you know, I would hold Fergus back, I'd hold the project back, I would kind of spoil things. And a little bit of that came from previous events that I'd been on one where mile four, I'd broken my leg, and I continued. I'm capable of pushing through the pain, but I hadn't finished it. And there's been three pretty key events that I tried to attend that I hadn't finished because of pretty catastrophic injury a couple of times. And I'd just gotten to the point on day three where I'd gotten so involved in this what if scenario in my head that I'd kind of lost sight of everything apart from the what if. So when we got down to the truck at the midway, at the summit on that particular day, we had a conversation in the truck, and we talked. Doug talked, Brody, the cameraman talked, Fergus talked, and we reframed it for me in such a way for me to understand that were I to stop that minute, it isn't a failure. Whether if I stop that minute, the project isn't over and my involvement isn't over. I just become part of this kind of evolving support team. And reframing that and understanding that I was kind of obsessed with this what if, and having it taken away from me and explained to me, you don't need to think that way. it changed the whole thing for me. And I think you would agree, even yourself, Gaz, that from those kind of early days right up to the end of it, the perspective very much changed for me, where I kind of settled into this, well, there's no point worrying about the what ifs. If you're here, if you're present, if you're there, if you're supportive, if you're acting as part of that larger support team, then you've already achieved it. So by day three, day four, I'd kind of accepted that we'd already won, we'd already done it, we'd already gotten to the end in a certain sense, and we just had to keep marching forward and doing as much as we could. So the injury, not to be too woolly about it, kind of gifted me something. And I'm still injured now, but it kind of gifted me a little bit of perspective that maybe I hadn't taken with me. And I'm very grateful for that. Grateful to the guys for what they gave me, but grateful for the moment and for the pain, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, suffer is a privilege, you know. I think that's a term that a lot of people have used in the past, you know, that that privilege of understanding suffering. Again, it goes back, harked back to me saying around, you get a new context, you get a new perspective, and that reframing is another way of saying a new perspective on your reality. And it doesn't have to be the way you're thinking, and we're all guilty of it, get stuck in our ruts of thinking, and it sometimes needs that, so those brothers, those sort of people around you to pull you out of that rut. And that's important that we've got those people. I'm keen to start wrapping this up, guys. It's I could go on for ages, but there's one of the things that I'm keen to ask you, a bit of a hot potato, just as we're talking, there's a few times it's popped into my mind, but I related the challenge in some ways to the hills on selection. It's similar. It's not the same. It's similar. And without a shadow of a doubt, the hardest moment for me on the hills process, conscious it was well over 20 years ago now, as what I remember, it was the alarm going off in the morning and pulling the duvet back and getting out of bed. And that might sound ridiculous to some people, but by miles, it was not the day, not day two, not day three, but day seven, day nine, day 10, pulling the duvet back and getting out of bed is incredibly challenging because your body doesn't want to. So just talk to me a little bit about that each, would you? Because I imagine that was one of the challenging things for you as well, the start of the day, because what you had most days, 5 hours, maybe 6 hours sleep?
At best, yeah. And I think, to be honest, the biggest internal battle that I had of the entire thing was the continuous process of getting out of bed. It genuinely at points seemed impossible. And I remember, I think it was you I speak to Gaz on this, was I think it was only day three or day four, because we were spent and burst from the first couple of days that had been more challenging than we'd expected on paper. We'd had less sleep than we expected on paper, whilst at the same time, in our calculations, not accounting for the necessary amount of sleep. So we were just way off where we should have been in many ways. And we were just miles behind in terms of what was required. And I just found it so, so difficult to get moving in the mornings. And I was looking for ways to slow things down, sort of just lying there, not really wanting to go back to sleep necessarily, but just not wanting to exit the duvet. It was kind of like a symbol. It's like putting on a uniform. I didn't want to change my presence.
Accept. Yeah. You didn't want to accept what
needed
to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, it's where those sort of battles of actually, you're not up to this. You've expected too much of yourself. You think you're better than you are. All these little vicious little thoughts crept into my head when I was lying there in bed, staring at the wall, thinking this is grim. And what slowly came into play, and this probably isn't the case on selection because of the duration of it, but I managed to slowly register that once I got moving, once I was on the hill, once I was interacting with people, once I didn't have a choice anymore, I was having a great time at points most of the time. But when it was meeting a new person, making a stupid sadistic joke here or there, just getting moving and getting away from any sense of safety, comfort, once I was out there without having it within touching distance, the battle with myself in bed didn't seem to matter anymore. And I think the more that I learned that, the easier it became to mentally get out of bed, but physically it was getting more and more difficult because my body needed more and more sleep. And towards the end, my feet started swelling up. There was no venous return at all. And there was one night where we got to bed with sort of 2 hours extra in the bank, and I slept less than I'd slept any night before. And then I was just woke up in the morning lying in bed furious. that I hadn't been able to sleep properly. And then my tiredness was compounded by rage, and Doug actually came in and found me asleep on the floor with my feet up on the bed 45 minutes after I was meant to be out of bed, because I just fallen asleep on the floor trying to drain my legs out.
In a V-sit position. Yeah.
Yeah. You should buy my 90s fitness DVD. I go into it in depth. but no, it was honestly, it was miserable. I mean, we both started getting cold sweats, didn't we? And it was just the craving for comfort and sleep and warmth and a duvet and just being wrapped in bubble wrap and called pretty by your mom, all this stuff. It just seemed so essential in that moment. But to be honest, that's what I'm most proud of. I think what I'm most proud of us, most proud of myself for doing, is managing to keep showing up, because I know internally I'm never going to be able to express it. Nobody other than me is ever going to be able to truly understand it. Johnny, obviously you have a very similar experience, but we're all individual, we're all unique. And I'm really proud of myself for continually getting out of bed when I know how much of a battle I was going on inside it. Second biggest takeaway was we are capable of more than we realize, even when it seems really, really difficult. And it's just conditioning. I got better at getting out of bed by battling to get out of bed. But day one, day two, day three genuinely seemed impossible.
Johnny?
I didn't find it a problem at all. I just needed the toilet, got up, and then got on with my day. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I mean, I could probably repeat a lot of what Fergus said. I'm conscious that we're probably running low on time here, but the fact of the matter was that was brutally tough each day. There were parts of it, and I guess it's easy to think about the bed as being, you can picture it. It's easy to picture for everybody. Everybody struggles now and again to get out of bed, don't they? In that scenario, knowing what you're about to do next made it worse. But there was parts during the day where that kind of came back again. So each time we had to, you know, if we'd come down off the mountain, we're going back up for another summit, you would get that moment, not dissimilar to bed, where you think, I need to go and get another drink first. I'm just going to nip to the toilet. I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to do that. There's a person over here I need to speak to. And this kind of procrastination that you then have to stop yourself entering into is constant. So I think, as Fergus says, we kind of got a bit better at it, worse at times, but you just have to practice. And I think it comes back down, and perhaps this is a nice way to sort of wrap up some of this. It comes back down to that kind of first step. As brutally horrible as it is, as much as you don't want to do it, as much as Fergus has just described, you want to be cocooned and safe and warm and not have to face these struggles and this suffering. All you have to do is just pop one foot out of the duvet and maybe sit that on the floor. Think about that. You've done one, might as well do the other, and just slowly kind of lean yourself out. And by the time you're stood up, you might as well take the next step and get yourself into the bathroom, wherever you need to do. And so each one, you know, before you know it, we're at the bottom of the mountain, ready to head off, already laughing and giggling. And going back to what Fergus said, there became an awareness of that pretty quickly. But a few days in, it was a case of, well, I know that if I get up, it's still going to feel as shit as it did all the other times. But I know what's at the other end of it, and I'm more willing to continue and take that first step. So I think it boils down to that repeating itself over and over on the hill, in bed, wherever we may have been. Sitting in the truck was one. Do I have to get out of this bloody truck now? I've got a great big coat on and it's warm in here and there's music and we've been enjoying ourselves, and now you've got to get out, you know. So yeah, we got better at that, but it's a good life lesson too.
Massively, it worked well for everyone. Massively. It goes back to that getting comfortable with the uncomfortable, get comfortable being uncomfortable, and all of the above, because I thought exactly the same when you're describing that. You know, the first day I turned up, you guys came downstairs, you looked broken. And I was like, oh, didn't expect that. I expected, you know, day two buzzing. And I was like, wasn't what I was met with, because bed and getting out of it had been such a struggle already. And Johnny had an extra flight of stairs to come down, which, you know, you made me laugh earlier when you said we passed each other on the stairs, as though, and people might listening might be thinking that'd be a quick moment in time, but no, it took them 2 minutes to pass each other on the stairs, because that's how fast they were moving at that stage each day. And I think, just again, hopefully people listening can understand, and they're not joking when they say this, just that getting out of bed is the day's challenge, because each step you take forwards from that moment on does become there's new challenges, but there's less challenges. You know, they had a brand new Defender, Land Rover Defender, beautiful car, but in many ways it was poison, in the sense of you got in there, it was heated up for you before you got in there. The seats were warm, the air conditioning was up, there was music playing. So guess what happened when we pulled into the car park of Ben Nevis? Well, the last thing you wanted to do was crack that door. And I've got to tell this story. It was it's just popped into my mind.
I know what story this is as well.
There was a moment when they thought they'd forgotten their water bladders for going up on
it
the
was
mountain.
It was gators.
Yeah, it was gators. They thought they'd forgotten the gators, like as if they couldn't manage without gators, right? And there was that realization that something had been forgotten, and then Doug would have to go back and go back to the house to go get the gaiters, and that might give them an extra half an hour in the car before they stepped off that day. And the joy, they didn't express it openly, but the joy in their eyes that the gaiters had been forgotten, which, as Doug quickly sort of furrowed around in the back of the car with much like pulling out Excalibur from the stone, found the gaiters. And I don't have the vocabulary to explain how broken they both looked, because they weren't then getting the extra half an hour in their warm, comfortable £60,000 motor. So again, just understand, people listening, that just how challenging doing these sometimes quite simple things are. And if you're not feeling like you want to do it, just understand that is everybody most of the time. I can't remember the last time I sprung out of bed. I never want to get out of bed. But you know, we need to make those steps, and as the day goes on, things get progressively easier. So it was a good time. I mean, I got a snapshot in time for me seeing you guys, and I thought it was incredible what you were doing. It was great to be, for me, just to see it, be a part of it. I'd never been to Ben Nevis before. It was amazing to get up there. I was, again, felt lucky the few times that I went up and down, the scenery is absolutely epic. And, you know, I realized that I certainly need more of that. And my house is pretty comfortable, but comfortable is not always what you need. And it certainly reminded me of that. But no, I don't know if you've got any kind of final comments. I'll say that for each of you. Go final comments.
No, just for anyone that's listening to part two and has also listened to the first installment, that has any takeaways, insights, anything they resonated with as part of the journey as a whole, we would both equally love to hear from you. And please don't feel that you need to sugarcoat anything or need to be brief or concise. We'd love to hear if there's anything you take away from the project. We've got a lot of profound lessons that we've learned, but this wasn't a personal endeavor. We everything is a good byproduct for us to take away, I guess, but the aim was to understand how, basically to better understand how we can try and invert perspectives, change perspectives, have an impact on people's lives, so we can keep engaging in projects like this in the future, to build a bit more momentum, to get that first challenge out of the way, to sort of use that analogy you just used. Once we've built a bit of momentum in terms of engaging the message, we hope that we can continue to do so. And yeah, just if anyone's got anything to share, we'd love to hear it. But no, thank you again, Gaz, for having us. Thank you for coming along. It was very insightful. And you could all just have another fresh face to call us morons and laugh at us hobbling down the stairs.
It's brilliant. It's been a while since I've been told I've got a fresh face, but I'll take that, Fergus. Johnny, do you want to close up, mate?
Yeah. I think the key thing that I've gotten from it that I'm very grateful for is that the idea was that we were there in order to try and deliver a message, try and help people in one way or another, in our own little way, really try and reach out and say, you know, we know what the message is now. And through that process, we receive so much back, ourselves as individuals, there on Nevis with the support team, and through the messages and through the feedback on social media, that the whole thing became a huge gift to us. We went out there hoping we could do something for others, and we hope we can continue with that. But we got so much from it that I think this kind of message of service, if we can offer out and do out, what you get back from it from giving is you know, it's twofold, threefold more, and that sort of reciprocation there was really underlined for me, and I know it was for Fergus as well. So I think there's a message there for people. I won't hammer that home, but our gratitude can probably never be conveyed enough, and just working to each other, I think, and up through that group to the people that were there, on to yourself, and the support that you've given us has been immeasurable, and then to everybody that donated for sure, and people that just spread the message and fed back to us personally. I think we'll be eternally grateful for those moments and for the gift it's given us. And so, yeah, thank you, everybody.
Awesome. And I'm sure there's a lot of people, and I speak on behalf of a few that have messaged me around this topic, actually. Just, you know, you mentioned about how you can help people. Well, you've helped people by inspiring them in lots of ways to think about their issues and to think about what might be their mountains and the things that they're not facing. And, you know, this will probably be the same again with listening to you guys talk about it, as in your reflections, just how positive on reflection an experience it was, even though at the time it seemed pretty dark. And you know, you've I know for a fact you've inspired tons of people. There's been thousands of people watching what you've been up to, and I'm sure a huge proportion of those have taken stock themselves and will learn from your experience and do something themselves. So amazing stuff, amazing challenge, amazing amount of money raised, lads. Well done from me. And I guess until next time, we'll speak again. Nice one, lads.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers, guys.